first recent mass shootings have prompted many to wonder how to prevent mass violence. Our next guest is part of a team at the University of Wisconsin-Madison that works to stop violence on campus before it happens.
Chris Cole is the director of Threat Intervention Services at the UW-Madison Police Department and a former FBI agent. He's in the studio with us to talk about what threat assessment is and how people can use it in their everyday lives. Chris, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, you do this thing called threat assessment. You did it for the FBI. You do it at UW-Madison. What do we mean by threat assessment?
You know, after we have a mass shooting or similar event, we'll often hear how this person just snapped. And that's rarely the case. And there's a pretty distinct pathway that most of these individuals follow. And they kind of throw off warning signs along the way. With threat assessment, we try and recognize those warning signs and intervene before the event occurs.
And, yeah, you say no one just snaps. And I think so often after the mass shootings that we've seen lately, there's almost this idea that it's this force of nature. It's a thing that happens. It's like an earthquake. Nobody could have done anything about it. And you're really trying to change our thinking on that.
Absolutely. You know, we talk about this pathway that someone follows, and it really almost always begins with a grievance. And when we're looking at this grievance, it's important to look at it through the eyes of the person holding it. And for most of us, a lot of these things are trivial, things we just blow off. But for them, it becomes an obsession.
Yeah, we'll go up that pathway, starting at grievance, in just a bit. But first, is this profiling? I think people might say, is this like the profiler on the TV that we see, where we look at these demographic factors and we know who is likely to commit a crime?
No, it's not. And quite frankly, there's really no reliable demographic factor when we're looking at cases like this. It's really behavioral based.
So somebody has this grievance, and then a lot of people have grievances in their daily lives. Probably everybody has something. What is it that starts to separate someone who might be a potential threat? What do they take with that grievance, and where do they go from there?
Well, again, after this grievance, the first stage is this ideation. And that's sort of where they become good with violence being a way to handle it. In fact, it then goes into violence as being almost the only way to address this grievance.
And what kind of warning signs can people around them see? Because I think that's what we're really concerned about. People around them, or maybe even the authorities, what kind of red flags are there that this isn't just an angry person, this is an angry person that might take violent action?
You know, first thing we tell people is trust their instincts, trust their intuition, because there's really no better judge of one's surroundings than one living in that environment. So first, that's the first thing. And obviously, if somebody's got some concerns, we're going to want to flesh out why they have those concerns. What's the factual basis for why they feel that way?
And you're looking at this from the perspective of a university campus. People might be doing this from a workplace or a local government. There could be a lot of institutions. What do you do on that institutional level to watch for red flags, to collect them, and to gather that kind of information?
You know, first, it's good communication on campus, both within the student population and with our employees also. And again, just have a sense of awareness as far as what's going on about them. And then there are some specific things, you know, as far as looking for. It's kind of a change in energy or tone. And that can really go in both directions, really an increase, you know, almost a hyper sense of, yeah, of what's going on. And it could also go the opposite direction. When somebody's sort of checked out, it's also a concern.
I think people might be reluctant to say something to, say, a police department on a campus or in a town, thinking, what if I'm just reading this wrong? Maybe this is just kind of a weird person. I don't want them to get arrested based on my idle suspicion.
Well, you really, no one's going to get arrested. And, you know, the fact of most of these cases, there really isn't a crime hasn't been committed until the plan is fairly far along, and quite often until it's actually occurred. This is much more of a intervening and redirecting versus prosecuting.
Right. So how would you do that if there was someone who looked like they were partway along that pathway? So you got a tip from a student or faculty member or something like that. You looked at their communication and said, yeah, this looks kind of bad. Like, what's in your toolkit at that point?
You know, there's a couple of different things. It's about redirecting them. There's mental health services. There's, you know, what's going on with their lives. You know, and we go through this assessment process. We sort of look at what we call enhancers, things that are likely to make them act out, and also mitigators. And, you know, what's going on in their life, career-wise, family-wise, support system, and what can we do to build up those mitigators?
Talking to Chris Cole, Director of Threat Intervention Services at UW-Madison and former FBI agent, looking at the idea of threat assessment to prevent acts of violence. Now, just recently we saw in the news there was the horrible, of course, Sandy Hook shooting back in 2012. Some of those files came out in the reports that came out after that, and there were reports about the shooter as much as 4 years earlier talking specifically about wanting to shoot up that particular elementary school. And again, with that idea that we think somebody just snaps, that's a sign of people might think about this for weeks, even years, before committing an act like this.
That's correct. And with the Sandy Hook shooting, again, the warning signs were there. And it sounds like they were recognized and reported, and there's a follow-up that has to go on. And threats, their assessments, they're managed. And for law enforcement, that's kind of a change in how we approach things. And in my time in the FBI prior to 9/11, was very much about something would happen, investigate, and hold the person or individuals responsible for who did it. After 9/11, it was much more, how do we get ahead of threats? How do we act proactively? And for law enforcement, that's kind of a change of how we view things. You know, we tend to be wired to like a beginning, a middle, and an end. And as threat assessment and management, it's much more about managing that threat, ebbs and flows. And quite often, it's over a long period of time.
Some people might hear this and think, maybe feel a little funny about the idea that, okay, someone hasn't committed a crime, so why should they get enhanced attention from the police or other authorities?
And that's a good question. First, there has to be some sort of a predication to get involved. And for us, it's a reasonable belief that a person could poses a threat. And again, it's much more of initially a soft intervention approach. And the way these things turn out, these mass shootings, they don't turn out very well for the shooter or the shooter's family generally either. So again, it's much more of an intervention and a redirection.
And talk about some of the predictors. People talk a lot about domestic violence, a history of domestic violence being a predictor of future violence. Is that something you look at when you're making a threat assessment?
Yeah, there are. There are certain, again, these warning behaviors, and touched a little bit on that pathway behavior, which is that ideation, planning, preparation, and the attack. And then there's also some other, there's fixation type behavior. That's where, you know, this fixation, undue fixation, stalking type behavior. Something called novel aggression. That's the behavior, there's such a thing as a minor violent act to kind of get good with committing the bigger planned attack. And those are, again, some of the behaviors we look for.
Now, you do this, again, for UW-Madison. Most people listening probably work maybe for a smaller business or even a bigger business. They don't have their own, I imagine, threat assessment officer. So for somebody in that situation, when they see something, threats that regularly come in from a person, some of the behaviors you're talking about, what do they do?
Well, contact their human resources office. And here at UW and in most places, Office of Human Resources are really, really becoming more tuned in to work preventing violence in the workplace. There's a organization I belong to, the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals, and it's law enforcement, human resources, mental health, educational professionals. And every year we have in excess of 700 people attend our annual meeting. So again, threat assessment is something that human resources definitely tuned into, and some would definitely want to let them know if they had some concerns.
And let's talk about particular incidents that an organization like the ones I was mentioning would want to think about. So they've got maybe an employee that has raised concerns, and that person is then fired from the job. Is that a time where an organization should be taking extra careful steps?
Absolutely. And one of the phrases we use is separation does not equal security. And absolutely, be it a school, be it a business, there are times when that relationship has to end. But once that happens, we have to understand that, you know, the ability to observe on a daily basis, and quite frankly, the ability to influence behavior, both those goes away. So not saying that there aren't times to sever relationships, but we need to have a plan for what happens next.
We're talking to Chris Cole, Director of Threat Intervention Services at the UW-Madison Police Department. We're looking at threat assessment.
And you can join the conversation now by calling 800-642-1234. What do you think about this idea of threat assessment? What questions do you have for our expert? And does your workplace have an emergency plan? And what makes you feel safe or not at your job? You can call in now at 800-642-1234. Again, that number is 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. We're picking up our discussion now about threat assessment with Chris Cole. He's the Director of Threat Intervention Services at the UW-Madison Police Department.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest about this idea of threat assessment? How does your workplace handle the potential for violence? Do you feel safe at work? If you work at a university or school, have you been trained to react to an incident of violence? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. To your calls now, Lisa is with us in Janesville. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I'm just calling with my experience. Our family just moved back from England, and while living in England, I worked in the school system, and all school personnel were trained in threat assessment, and it's very much what your guest was saying. It was based on behavior. There wasn't profiling. And the advantage that was also seen as being in the school system is oftentimes children will say things that can alert personnel to something that may be happening in the family, and often mental health services was involved. It was, as you were saying, soft-level intervention to try to prevent a crisis. And we did see cases where there was significant benefit, and we did prevent something possibly awful from happening.
Lisa, thanks a lot for calling in and sharing that experience. And Chris, the idea of having that training in place, maybe a point of contact for everybody who works in that school in this case.
Oh, absolutely. And particularly with incidents at schools, Secret Service and Department of Education did a study on this, and kind of telling is that school attackers, 60% former or current students, 11% former or current employees, 20% with a indirect affiliation. Those are going to be generally domestic violence cases that find their way onto campus. So the takeaway on that is threats to schools, it's going to be somebody we know.
Lisa, thanks a lot for calling in and sharing your experience there. Dennis is with us now in New Auburn. Dennis, hi.
Hi. Hey, a question that I had is just kind of what I've noticed is a lot of these people that create these tragedies seems like they start off as abusers of their wife or abusers of children. It seems like that's kind of a starting point for them, or it seems like they all have that in common. Do you see that in your studies there?
Yeah, and when we're looking at some of these, you know, risk behaviors, warning behaviors, precursors, absolutely. Domestic violence being one of them. Childhood exposure to violence, that's also seen as a risk factor that unfortunately continues on through adulthood.
Thanks for that call, Dennis, at 800-642-1234. I want to talk a little bit, Chris, about trends in mass shootings, mass violence episodes. We've seen a lot of them in the news, high-profile ones, but they are still rare. Most of us will go through life, knock on wood, without ever encountering such an event. Are we seeing more of them, though, over time?
You know, the answer is yes. The FBI did a study that was released in 2014 and looked at these incidents of active shooters between 2000 and 2013. Kind of the first half of the study, about 6 a year. The second half of the study, about 16 a year. So the short answer is, yes, they're increasing. But I think it's also important to view them in the context of, we have 12,000 homicides a year in the United States. So as a proportion of those, it's still a very small proportion.
And can we use similar tools of threat assessment, not just when we're talking about multiple attacks or mass violence, but for some of those individual acts?
Oh, absolutely. And there are a couple of different threat assessment tools that kind of, again, weigh out risk factors and things. And for domestic violence cases, they're very useful. So yes, they can.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Amelia is with us in Appleton. Hi.
I'm wondering if you see in your studies that abusive animals like their own pets or other people's pets is a predictor of this behavior.
You know, I can't say specifically about pets, but that sort of getting good with being violent, absolutely, you know, either towards animals, towards other individuals. That's that novel aggression that I talked about. So again, not sure about specifically with pets, but absolutely individuals will kind of do some things to get used to the violence.
So it's kind of a ladder almost. They progress into bigger acts of violence.
Correct.
In many cases.
Correct.
Thanks for the call, Amelia. We're talking to Chris Cole, Director of Threat Intervention Services at UW-Madison's Police Department, also former FBI agent, looking at the idea of threat assessment. Back to your calls. Clayton is on the line in Eau Claire. Clayton, hi.
Hi there. I'm calling because I'm wondering what kind of predictive value this threat assessment really has. It just seems like, from the things that I've been hearing so far, that a lot of these things are things you find out after the fact or are difficult for small organizations to find out?
Well, raise a very good question. And first, obviously, after the facts come out, after an incident, when we go back and look at it, we're all geniuses picking things out then. And threat assessment, it's much more about prevention than prediction, if that makes sense. Again, things become very clear after the fact, but it's, again, trying to parse those out and then trying to prevent things from happening versus predicting them.
Clayton, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Lee on the line in Pewaukee. Lee, hi.
Hi. I just had a quick comment. I understand that there's a need for some of this, you know, looking for certain behaviors in students, but I do caution. I get a little worried that, you know, teachers might try to peg a kid or everything they see might think of as a threat when really it's not. And so I think that we really need to be careful because that's a lot of power for school systems to have and these teachers, and they could really identify something incorrectly, and then all of a sudden you have a kid who's pegged who really there was no intention of anything there. So I think we just need to be careful of that.
And I would agree. And this, again, kind of goes back to instinct and intuition, too. If you've got a teacher that's been in the classroom for any length of time, they have a pretty good baseline as far as what's actually threatening and what's not.
Thanks for that call, Lee. But I wonder about, you know, we hear about implicit bias. If someone even unconsciously reads, does some profiling of their own without even thinking about it, thinking this ethnic group or what have you is more prone to violence, they might see this behavior threatening in that kid and the same behavior not in that other kid that doesn't fit their profile.
You know, and I think it's important to also point out that threat assessment is done as a team approach. And for instance, here at UW, it's not just the police department. It's our dean of students office. It's our university health services, university legal. So I think when you get multiple sets of eyes looking at an issue, that's a good way to kind of make sure we're not jumping to a conclusion. We're not letting biases set in.
Thanks a lot again for your call, Lee. So how can I think we come back to this smaller agency, an individual-owned business or something like that. How can they try to use some of the tools that you're using, as you say, as part of a team effort at that smaller scale?
You know, first is have a plan. There's a lot of information out there. Again, I mentioned ATAP, the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. There's AS-IS, which is the Society of Industrial Security. There's a lot of good information out there and available to businesses that they can look at. And again, if they don't have the scale to have their own threat assessment team, there's a lot of good professionals out there. It's being pushed out to our local police departments. They're able to offer help.
And I know you do presentations. We saw one here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Is that something that maybe local police departments can do for the Chamber of Commerce or other small, groups of smaller.
Yes, certainly. And a lot of the training as a result of these mass shootings, there's been the, what to do if a shooter enters your building, the run, hide, fight. We want to get ahead of that. And I think the threat assessment training, getting that out there in a preventive mode, is just as important, in my view, if not more, than the what to do if it actually happens.
And you said important in your view, are more people taking this idea seriously now?
Absolutely.
We'll leave it there. Chris, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking to Chris Cole. He was a former longtime FBI agent. He is now the Director of Threat Intervention Services at the UW-Madison Police Department. He joined us to talk about the idea of threat assessment. You can let us know over at the Ideas Network Facebook page or email us at ideas@WPR.org. Does your place of work have something like this in place? Do you do this? Have you reached out to maybe a local police department for information about threat assessment? Let us know on the Ideas Network Facebook page.